Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Joseph P. Laycock is the editor of the Penguin Book of Exorcisms. He's an associate professor of religious studies at Texas State University, and he joins us on the phone right now. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. First off, and you're a professor of religious studies, so you really, and you've written other books on this, you've researched this stuff. Overall, do you believe that this really occurs? Possessions truly do occur?
You know, I'm agnostic about that. Yeah, I definitely believe that these experiences happen and that these are really powerful. So in that sense, they're real. I mean, they're life changing for the people who believe they've been possessed or believe they've gone through an exorcism. As far as, you know, evidence of levitation and superhuman strength and these other things, you know, it would be great if we had a reliable videotape or something like that showing that phenomena. So far, we don't have it. So. The jury's still out.
Is that kind of the thing, though, that gets you? I have ghost hunters on the show from time to time, things like that. And I'm like, after all these years, we've got the phones, we've got everything now, and we're still not actually catching this. You know, David Blaine does this, but we don't see this happen when they're calling priests. Why is that? And that leads you to think, well, maybe these aren't really happening, and people are kind of experiencing maybe a mass hysteria on a small scale and thinking they all saw something and getting freaked out by something, and maybe these are things that could be explained?
Absolutely. I think this is a misconception. So some of the cases in the book show there were people in the Middle Ages who were able to prove this person isn't really possessed, right? They're faking it, because they would read, you know, the dictionary to them in Latin, and they would begin thrashing around because they thought that the Latin was a prayer. There were Greek physicians in 600 BC who said these people are not possessed. They're just, there's been damage to their brain, and that's why they behave this way. So there's always been skeptics, right, who have taken rational interpretations. It's not like this is something that was only invented in the 20th century. Having said that, you know, again, I wasn't there when these things happened, so I like to have a little bit of modesty before I dismiss them.
All right. Tell me a little bit about what we know about possession in general. Some of the bullet points say signs include levitation, superhuman unnatural strength, extension of the limbs and neck to incredible lengths, raving, howling, speaking in tongues. So a lot of these things that, you know, do we have... You mentioned that, you know, there have been ones that people haven't believed over the years. Do we have kind of a starting point for possession and exorcism, like where that really came from historically? Was there a time when this was very common, and so it's kind of a tradition that's carried on? Or do we know when the idea of being possessed truly started in culture?
I mean, this all depends on what you mean by being possessed. So the symptoms that you just described, levitation, blasphemous rage, superhuman strength, the ability to speak languages you've never studied. These are all associated with the Christian tradition, and really the Christian tradition only going back about 500 years or so. If you look at in the Bible, you do see people like the Gerasene demoniac who tells Jesus, "My name is Legion," and can break chains. But you also see a lot of people, and demons are cast out of them, and, you know, they have a demon that makes them blind, or they have a demon that makes them crippled. That's all the demon is doing. They don't have any of these spectacular episodes. So the idea that everyday problems humans have are caused by spirits goes back through all of recorded history. So some of the first texts in the book are from ancient Mesopotamia and places like this, and written on a tablet. So this is a way that human beings have always understood the world.
I have to laugh because they list here some of those signs, and we went through some of them. The last one they list is a hateful glowing stare. And I'm thinking, well, I have three teenagers at home right now that I need work with right there. I imagine you have to have multiple symptoms. We can't just go with hateful glowing stare, or else there'll be too many people falling into that list. The book is called The Penguin Book of Exorcisms. Let's talk a little bit about one of the most famous ones, at least in pop culture, everything that The Exorcist was based on. We'll ask Joseph about that next, 720 WGN. Joseph Laycock is the editor of the Penguin Book of Exorcisms, out now. You can you know, it's the month of October. Let's have some fun. Well, I don't know if you call this fun or not. Let's talk, Joseph, about one of the most famous stories of all time, of course, is the movie and the book The Exorcist. And there's a couple of stories in here that related to the, or at least were inspirations for the movie and or the book. Well, are there multiple stories told in that movie? And is the movie the same story as the book, or did they take some liberties with the book when they made the movie?
Well, they did take some liberties in both cases. For example, the author, William Peter Blatty, hated that Reagan's head can spin 360 degrees, right? And he said, that how would that be possible, even if you weren't possessed by a demon? But, of course, I think William Friedkin, the director, was right to include it. William Peter Blatty, when he was a student at Georgetown University, where the film is set, saw an article in the Washington Post about an exorcism that had begun in nearby Maryland, and he said, I wanted so badly for the story to be true, because if this was really happening, and it was a boy, not a girl, was really possessed by a demon, if demons are real, then God must be real, too. And that means that, you know, I haven't wasted my life being a Catholic and keeping the faith.
Interesting.
And it was years before he was actually able to tell the story that he wanted to tell, and he reached out to some of his old Jesuit teachers, and they said, well, if you're going to do this, you got to do it right. And so he studied Catholic demonology. He studied a lot of other cases of possession, and the ones that he thought were compelling and seemed authentic, he would include elements of that in his story as well. So, for example, there was a very famous exorcism in 1928 in Iowa that describes a woman projectile vomiting all over the place. And the priests are saying, how can this much vomit come out of one woman? So that's probably what most people remember about the film now.
Sure. Sure. Now, tell me a little bit about that, because you researched that story and you have some interesting new information, I think, on that, right?
That's right. So for people who've ever heard of this case, the church basically wanted to keep it covered up. The church was much more shy about exorcism back in those days. But people talk, and the exorcists and actually the woman being exorcised were all German or German-American, and the story made it to Germany, and it got published in a German pamphlet that was eventually translated in America as Begone Satan. So now everybody could read this story, and some Catholics were very embarrassed by it at the time. But the story is very triumphant, and it says, you know, we cured this poor woman, we drove Satan out of her. And it was a victory not just for the exorcist, but for all American Catholics. We all did it together, right, with our prayers. And then I discovered a second account of this that was hand-typed, and it begins with the words, this is never to be published, either in print or from the pulpit. And I found this in an old library. And in that version, the exorcism was not successful. The woman was still possessed when that document was written in 1934. But the other thing that's very interesting is the exorcist was sort of using her to talk to supernatural beings. So she would say, you know, the demons are back, but now there's angels fighting them. And the priest would say, well, what are the angels saying? I'd like to ask the angels some questions. And he ends up getting this prophecy that the world is going to end and Jesus is going to return in 1955. So it's probably good that the church kept a tight lid on this, because it would have been pretty embarrassed in 1955 when Jesus had still not shown up just yet.
Well, and you imagine not only him not showing up, but the panic that would have ensued if people really believed he was going to.
That's right. So anyway, that's one of the exciting things about this book, is I can finally share at least part of that document with the public.
Tell me about the one of the Zulu woman, one of the most famous or spectacular, at least, for what was seen. How real is this?
Well, so it's a pretty famous case. It shows up a lot on sort of lists of famous exorcisms. This woman's name was Jemana Tele or Chele, and she was from a Zulu family in South Africa, and she was being raised in a mission run by a group called the Marian Hill Mission Society. And I kind of found third and fourth hand versions of the story, and was finally able to track it down to an original pamphlet, which gives really specific details. And it's saying that this woman was doing things like levitating, but not just I saw her levitate once, which is the kind of thing you usually see, but levitating every day, 4 or 5 feet in the air, and people would yank on her and try to pull her back down. And there's multiple sort of priests and nuns all citing that they saw this. So as a historian, I'm really flummoxed. I have to either conclude they were just making the whole thing up. They just said, let's pull the leg of people about what we're doing out here in South Africa. Or there's something that really can't be explained happening here.
It's really tough with it, isn't it? Because you don't have, I think, especially in today's day and age with the ready-made video all the time for everything. Now we want that concrete evidence. We don't have the faith, I guess, that we used to have in just hearing about things and believing them.
That's right. It's a case that I went through with my students, and we made a chart on the blackboard, and we said, what are some possibilities to explain all of these mysterious things that this possessed woman could do, because she was allegedly speaking in other languages, she was extending her body out to impossible lengths, she knew things that nobody else should know, including various sins that people in the community were ashamed of. And my students are pretty smart, so they said, like, well, what if she was kind of hiding near the confessional and was able to overhear things? Or what if she had just sort of learned just enough Latin or just enough German being around these people to use it? But things like the levitation, and especially levitating so high and for so long, it's hard to explain it away. It's hard to account for it.
There was a story of a French town of Loudun. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but a whole convent of nuns became possessed.
That's right. And this is a very famous case. Aldous Huxley, the novelist, adapted the novel The Devils of Loudun. And then Ken Russell made a film just called The Devils in 1971. And so this trope of these kinds of frenzied demonic nuns is something that you see sometimes in movies or in, you know, rock videos and things like this. But this happens not regularly, but we have many cases like this from this period where the whole convent will become possessed. And in Loudun, while these nuns were possessed, they said, it is this very attractive young priest who's new in town who bewitched us. And that's why we're like this. And that priest was not popular because of his various dalliances around town, and he was tortured and burnt at the stake because of what these nuns said about him while they were possessed. And at least some of these nuns said, I'm really sorry I was faking all of this.
Oh, I was just really going to ask.
I was just bored.
I was just going to ask, did this priest wrong nun? And she said, you know what, now we're getting him. We'll say he possessed us. And then the next thing you know, the guy's burned at the stake. That's crazy.
That's right. But of course, when the nuns try to come clean, the exorcists say, well, that's the devil talking. That's not really the nun speaking. Tie her up again, and we're going to keep doing this.
Yeah, until you admit you were possessed. Wow, that's pretty fascinating. Can you imagine, though, back in the days when we burned people at the stake? Execution of anything is awful, but burned at the stake, can you think of a worse way?
Well, and Aldous Huxley's conclusion was that a lot of the people burning this guy knew full well he wasn't a sorcerer, knew he didn't make a pact with the devil or anything like this. They just didn't like him.
Ugh.
And this was their chance to get rid of him and get away with it.
Man. You have this book is the Penguin Book of Exorcisms, but you've written other books kind of on it. Speak of the Devil, Spirit Possession Around the World. You research this quite a bit. Do you feel that we will ever, it's interesting you mentioned that Blatty said if he could find out for sure that there were demons, that gives us, proof of the existence of higher powers. So you've studied this for so long. I know you said you're agnostic on it, but do you think that within your lifetime, you'll be able to say, wow, this is real, or prove that it is not?
You know, in philosophy, they teach you you can't prove a negative, right? So
yeah,
I don't think we're going to have any evidence that shows the spirit world doesn't exist. As far as proving it does exist, it's unlikely, but it's not impossible. I mean, I'm in the wrong department. You need to talk to physicists and things like this to see if there's anything to that. Another theme, if you watch the movie The Exorcist, though, is the demons don't want to give you solid proof. Right, the demons really want to string you along, and they're not going to do. They say that would be too vulgar a display of power. So it's not like a normal scientific phenomenon. If demons are real, there's something that's actively hiding from us and making sure we can't ever have any certainty about their existence.
Well, I don't remember what movie it's from, or if the movie just lifted it from somebody more. But the line, right? The best trick the devil ever pulled was convincing man he didn't exist.
That's right. The usual suspects.
Yes, okay, there you go. There you go. All right. It's called The Penguin Book of Exorcisms. Joseph P. Laycock is the editor and associate professor of religious studies at Texas State University down there in Austin. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone tonight. We really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, man.
Thanks for having me.
Hope we talk again. Again, everybody, this is for your reading pleasure this October, The Penguin Book of Exorcisms.